I have almost no memories growing up of ever seeing a beggar in this kind of situation. And even when I moved from Bega, from the country, to Sydney, to the Big Smoke, I still don't have any strong memories of really seeing it. It was only when I first traveled overseas to Rome and to Paris and places like that, and almost every church you go into, there are beggars sitting there, lying there at the doors of the church, crying out for alms, for money. And I've always been so conflicted about how to respond, about how to offer appropriate assistance. You know, the older and wiser people will say, look, you know, they, even if you give them money, they will simply use it for drugs or for alcohol. And that may well be the case, but it still doesn't make me feel any better. And, you know, I've been had lots of stories of giving money to people and then, yeah, seeing them just abuse that. But it's a really, profoundly difficult kind of question to solve, and a lot of it has to be done at a societal level. But we need to respond as best we can. And I think that's the impact of this story about Lazarus. It's the only one of the 40 parables that Jesus tells where any of the characters get a name. So we get these two names, Abraham and Lazarus. The rich man, unusually, he doesn't get a name, which is kind of so different from our own experiences. We know the names of the rich and the wealthy, the famous, but here the tales are reversed. The rich man is described in these fabulous ways. You're dressed in the purple linen, the most expensive that you can buy. Only the royalty normally would be dressed in purple. Even his underwear was of the best quality, the finest linen. He didn't feast occasionally. He feasted magnificently every day. So the contrast is set up. Then this poor man, Lazarus, is laid at the door. So it seems that he's not even able to walk himself, that he needs other people to carry him and to lay him there, hoping that he will receive at least the scraps from the master's table. That's such a contrast that is established between these two situations. And I think it's when we see this stark contrast that it really brings to mind. Again, as I've traveled, and I've traveled through the shanty towns and the slum areas, and so often they're located right next to these luxurious, rich areas of the cities. And the contrast between the beautiful rich areas and these abject places of poverty is so stark and so contrasting. Then we are given the scenario that both die. The rich man dies and he's buried. Lazarus presumably is not, but he's taken to the bosom of Abraham. Now, it's a parable, so we don't look at this story to get the full impact of Jesus' teaching about what happens to us when we die. You know, just as we should completely ignore, usually, most of those stories of people who have near-death experiences. It'd be like me describing a near-pregnancy experience. You know, completely useless and pointless, because it's a near experience, it's not the actual experience. And God knows the difference between a person who's almost dead and someone who is completely dead. So this is not the scenario that we need to kind of ponder about the state of hell. And it's not about hell either. It's about Hades, or in the Hebrew understanding, Sheol. Sheol was simply a place where people would go when they died. There was very little teaching about what happened. It was just a place of waiting, a place where you weren't able to experience really anything much at all. And so Hades is simply just this waiting place between the when you die and to what Jewish belief ultimately said was that you would be raised to new life in the new creation. And that was the longing that we see, and is certainly the longing that we have in the New Testament, most especially in 1 Corinthians 15 and then in Revelation 21 and 22. So here we get this parable, and it's more about the impact of what's happening here and now. Now, what is interesting is that we don't get any background at all about either character. We're not told about any of the good things that Lazarus did other than his longing for justice. We aren't told any of the bad things that the rich man did, other than his complete indifference to this poor man. And so it's these characteristics that we need to take on board. This is the presumption about the way that God works, that there is this sense of justice that leans towards those who are most vulnerable, the Anoim, the poorest, those who have nothing and no situation that they can rely on. We know that God has a heart for the poor. It's interesting that even the name Lazarus is derived from the Hebrew word Elazar, and El is the word for God, and Azar, God helps. And yet it seems that in his life, Elazar has not received the help that he needs. But after death, he does receive the help that he longs for. And for us, this reminder to trust completely in God. All that we can do is just rely on God's grace and God's goodness. We know that the moral arc of the universe is long, but it does lean towards justice. The gift of justice, this gift of this longing that we have, that all things will be made right. That's what this parable kind of reminds us about, that God is the one in control, that God is the one who will ultimately bring us into that place of fulfillment. What is our role? What is our place? We need to be connected. We need to have that same heart that God has. We need to have that same heart for the poor and for the vulnerable. We need to continue to long that God will indeed bring about that justice. And how do we do that? In whatever way we can. It's not necessarily in doing the grand gestures or the big actions, but it's being faithful in the little things that we're called and invited to do what we can. We can't solve the world's problems, but we can solve the problem of one person. We can act with kindness to someone that we know needs our assistance, whether that's a smile or a kind word, whether that's offering a place of a friendship, a place of welcome. We can do many things that will alleviate loneliness, that will alleviate that sense of disconnection and alienation. And that's what we're invited to do, to be like Lazarus, longing for God and just pouring ourselves out in complete dependence and reliance upon God's goodness and God's grace, and to do what we can to restore that sense of justice, to do what we can to care for the most vulnerable within our world.